All right, we are live on Facebook with my man David Washington. He's at D to the Wash on Instagram. He played high school baseball in San Diego, drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals, played with the Baltimore Orioles, made his big league debut with them, two seasons with the Long Island Ducks, and recently with the Milwaukee Milkmen, brand new organization, just found out. He was a first baseman and right fielder, only 29 years old, played 11 seasons professionally so far, man. I still think you got a lot left in the tank. Yes, sir. And we'll talk about that here. But give the people who may be listening here an idea. Who is David Washington? Give us your journey, your baseball journey. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so born and raised in San Diego, California, was a two-sport athlete in high school, baseball and basketball, drafted in the 15th round by the St. Louis Cardinals, and, you know, like you said, been playing professional baseball since. I don't know, I'm not good at the whole bio, but that's me.
What got you into baseball? Like when you were a young guy, like were you always, you said you were a two-sport athlete. What was the other sport?
Basketball.
So what got you into baseball? For me, I was the same way. I played basketball coming up, football, volleyball. And I always wanted to be a basketball player. And I like basketball way more than baseball. But I just, 2 points per game average wasn't going to get me a college scholarship. So I wasn't playing baseball. What was it for you? Like, what got you to choose baseball or got you to stick with baseball from when you were a kid?
So as a kid, I was just into sports. Anything competitive that I could, you know, be an athlete in, I wanted to do. And just as it, you know, as I kept going and it narrowed down, it just ended up being those two that I really fell in love with. And then come high school time, honestly, it was – the decision was just, you know, which one is going to take me further, do I think? And getting drafted in baseball, I felt like that was the move.
So, obviously, when you were drafted, coming up through high school and then, and you know, being drafted and making your way through the minors into the major leagues, were there any struggles that you had to go through and overcome? I'm sure there had to be as far as baseball is related.
Yeah, when I look back at it, it kind of seems like the whole thing was a struggle. Like, you know, like it never hasn't been a struggle. But I think overall, the biggest struggle for me has always been, dealing with the failure that's going to naturally come about in this game, and knowing that, you know, the things that I'm doing to prepare myself are the right things. And I don't need to change them just because I had a couple bad days in a row. I think that's always been my biggest struggle.
And, you know, baseball is a game of failure. I tell my young players all the time, like, you have to be a good failure. If you want to play baseball, you have to be a good failure because you're going to fail. The best guys fail 7 out of 10 times. And a lot of times it's coached by negative people, meaning if you make an error out there, they're going to be yelling at you, like, come on, you got to get that ball. Why are you, you know, making the error? Instead of, like, you know, and there's some good coaches, don't get me wrong. There's some good coaches. Right. Like, hey, come on, let's get them next time. And there's some good teammates. But for the most part, it's a game of failure coached by negative people. So you got to be able to, you know, have that thick skin and be able to overcome and adapt to failure because that's a huge part of it. Let me ask you this. Every kid's dream, or at least kids who play baseball, their dream is to play in the major leagues. And what was it like? What was the feeling like? Take us back to that moment, that experience when you got the call up. How did it happen? You know, who told you? Who did you tell? Just take us through the whole experience of when you got the call.
So let's see. We had just gotten back to Norfolk from, I want to say Durham, but I'm not sure. We had just gotten back from a trip. And I had just gotten to the clubhouse, was getting ready to, I think I had just gotten into the cage, gotten my, you know, my start of the day swings in, and I was back in the clubhouse just kind of hanging, you know, kicking back. There wasn't really anybody in there. And the manager came up to me and kind of casually told me that, hey, you're going to be, you're going to have to get your stuff together. You're going to be meeting the team in Chicago. tonight. And yeah, it's just, I mean, I think everybody I've heard talk about it says it's indescribable. I would agree with that. Best I can come up with is, I think for like the next 2 hours, I didn't feel like I had any control over the muscles in my face. Like, I don't know, have you ever felt like that kind of like excitement where you just don't know what everything's doing?
Right.
That's kind of how I felt. And I remember I called my dad. The first thing I did was I called my dad, and then just got to getting my stuff together and getting out of there.
That's so cool. Did you have any like idea that it was coming, or was it out of the blue? Or,
you know, it was funny because I think looking back, there were definitely, I was doing well at the time. And I think the day before I got called up because Chris Davis had pulled an oblique. I want to say, so he had a minor injury. So it was there, like I could have seen the signs, but it wasn't in my head that, oh, I might be going up. It just wasn't something, honestly, it wasn't something that I really gave myself time to think about because I felt like it would distract from what I was trying to do.
Right. What, let me ask you this. What was more of a crazy experience for you? I'm sure both special in their own way, but getting drafted or getting the big league call up?
Getting the big league call up was crazy. I don't know. It's tough because getting drafted was crazy to see, like how everybody else reacted. I still remember being at school because it happened like during class, and like coming out of class, I just got like swarmed by a bunch of people. And that was crazy because I had no like context for that, but I don't know, to go, what, eight plus years working towards something, not being sure if it was ever going to happen, and then having it happen is pretty special.
That is really cool. Now, you had all that experience in affiliated pro ball, and you got to play 2 years with the Long Island Ducks. You know Digme, by the way?
Yeah, I was going to say. Ray, right? Ray Navarette?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so a guy I went to school with, grew up with, he played with the Ducks as well. He was only there for a couple of weeks before he got hurt and left. But he got to meet Ray, and then I played in the Mets organization, and I believe Ray played there beforehand. So a lot of the guys were wearing the Digby stuff.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if you had that connection.
I got to meet him.
Or, oh, okay.
Yeah, he's already a Long Island legend by the time I by the time I got there. He has his number retired and all that stuff. So,
wow. Yeah. And so now you went from Long Island, and this is going to be the first season with the Milkmen.
Yeah.
What's going on? What do you see in your future with baseball? Like, are you still striving to get back to the big leagues, or like what's the current state of baseball with you right now?
So I think my goals as a player have kind of shifted from, you know, playing in the big leagues for 15 years to just playing at the highest level that I possibly can for as long as I can. You know, I think I kind of recognize that being in indie ball for 2 years, going on 3 years, is, you know, in today's game, it's a very uphill battle to get back to the big leagues. But the passion for just being the best player that I can be and competing and earning the respect of my peers on the field, I think that's something that I'll always enjoy regardless of where I'm at.
Yeah, that's huge. And having that self-awareness is huge too, because I know there's many guys who prolong or, you know, try to do more than is not that they're capable of, but just have unrealistic ideas of what's going on. And just having that self-awareness, I think, is huge, especially for young players too, because there's a lot of young players who, you know, have aspirations of playing Major League Baseball. But if they have more self-awareness, or maybe their parents provided more self-awareness or taught them how to have self-awareness, they might say, you know what, maybe it is soccer that I need to be focusing on or something like right. that, you know? And it's hard. Like for me, I thought I was going to play basketball in the NBA. Obviously I was no good at it, but it took me an experience to go through that experience to understand that, to have that. But that's really cool. That's a really great point, because it's not always about how, you know, what level you can play at, but also what you can do in the moment, where you're at, being a good teammate, contributing, right. you know, and those are the things, the experiences that you can do to have success, especially as a young athlete, and even at the highest levels, like you in the big leagues, that's huge. Tell us about that. Tell us, what is the difference between like playing in high school and playing at the highest level of the game, and like the teammates and the camaraderie and stuff like that?
Just so on the teammate aspect of it, just growing in this game. Just a point I wanted to make is that, like, I don't know, now when I talk to guys about other players, it's like, it's not so much about there. We might spend like 10 to 15 seconds talking about like, wow, that guy's a great swing. Like, man, that guy can pick it. That guy, this and that. But like, if we're talking about like teammates, it's like, what kind of teammate was he? Like, you know, the biggest thing people say about other people is like, man, that's a good guy, a good teammate, you know, like really enjoy being with that guy. So it's like, it becomes more about the person that you are in the clubhouse and you know, with your teammates than it is how well you play. Obviously we all want to play well and all that, but when, you know, a few years removed from that season, you're going to think more about like the people that you were around than what kind of players they were. And I think that's just maturity that goes on as you grow up, and you see that play out as you move along. When you get to AAA big leagues, you know, guys are less, I want to say cutthroat, because I haven't played with a lot of cutthroat guys, but like, you know, it's, everybody recognizes that this game is hard, and we're all just trying to get what we can out of it.
Yeah, that's so true. And you've make lifelong friends. Like, I still keep in touch with a lot of the guys that I came, a lot of the good guys, that I came up with. And you know, that's because you're living together. You're out there competing towards the same goal. So you have this like brotherhood that, you know, is unbreakable. And there's a lot of guys that I have played with that I still keep in touch with and love, like brothers. So it's, you know, baseball is great for that aspect too. Let me ask you this. Who were some of the role models that you had growing up? Because when I was younger, you know, I looked up to a lot of athletes, and that was real motivation for me. Their stories, like the struggles that they went through and overcame, mm-hmm. that was a real motivation to me. Were there any role models that you had when you were growing up?
It was always about the players. I always just modeled myself after, you know, who I wanted to play like. Tony Gwynn, Ken Griffey in the early years, just the smooth lefty swing. Albert Pujols, I remember, was a big one for me around high school age. I honestly couldn't tell you why, but I wanted to be left-handed Albert Pujols so bad. So and then, you know, getting drafted by the Cardinals and seeing him in camp was unbelievable. Yeah, those are the ones. And then, you know, basketball, you got MJ, you know, LeBron and all that. But yeah, baseball, I would say Pujols, Gwynn, and Griffey were the guy. And as a professional, I would say Miguel Cabrera. But besides that, that's about it.
Well, those are good guys to look up to for sure.
Those are good players.
For sure. Those are guys, good guys to aspire to be like. That's funny. What would you – do you have kids?
I do not.
So what would you say to parents, from your perspective, parents who have young players now going through the landscape of youth baseball, what advice would you give to them to help their players – come up, and if they aspire to be professional players, what advice do you have for them?
Parents is tough, especially not being a parent. But when the experience that I've had in talking to youth players and seeing kind of that that scene is, I think you got to kind of manage expectations. Understand that your kid's gonna struggle and is not gonna be as good as some other kids, and encouraging him to deal with some of that adversity, or just ultimately just have fun, you know, to get out and just play and not treat it like it's, you know, like we're all getting paid millions of dollars to play youth baseball. You know, it's that I'm a big believer in multiple sports and creating athleticism, and because they're going to have to learn how to move differently at some point, no matter how good of a coach you are or coaches you surround them with, as they grow, they're going to have to learn to move and look playing different sports, I think helps a lot with that. For a player that is looking to play professionally, I would say to learn to be a really good student of the game, and learn what that means. I think, you know, if you have to tell someone to work hard, they're not ready to be a professional. Every professional athlete works hard. They have that. That's the first separator, I think. But after that, it's the ability to access, process, and like implement information. So being able to study the game and yourself and use that information to make yourself better, I think is what's going to get you as far as you can go in the game professionally.
That's great. I love that you said student in the game. In fact, I was in this is kind of weird, but I was in the shower yesterday and I thought of this acronym, SMASH, and I'm not sure I'm going to remember all of the letters off the top of my head, but S was student of the game. So yeah. I was trying to think what encompasses a great player, and it was student of the game, master of feel, M for SMASH, attacker of fear, what's the next letter? S-M-A-S. I forgot the last two. But those were the first three. This was just in the shower the other day. It's weird. Like, you know, you're just sitting there thinking, I was washing my hair, and I'm like, what does it really take? And, you know, and I came up with it. I was like, those letters spell something. I got to remember that. I got to sit down and remember that. But that's funny that you said student. Yeah. Oh, hardest worker in the room was H.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I got that one from The Rock. He always talks about when you walk into a room, you always want to be the hardest worker.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What type of player were you? So, like, as far as, like, role-wise and positional-wise, hitting-wise, what type of player were you?
So, first base, outfield, corner positions. You know, I think on defense, if I could make the plays that I'm supposed to make, I was doing my job. I don't think anybody was expecting me to be a gold glove outfielder. But, you know, catch the ball you're supposed to catch, throw the ball where it's supposed to go. Hitting, you know, power and, you know, looking to drive runs in, create offense quickly. And base running, I was kind of a sneaky base runner. You know, large profile, people kind of assume that I couldn't run. And I could sneak you, you know, 7 to 10 bags a year, you know, if you need it. But, I don't know, like Cardinals organization was always, everything was preaching like, you know, check as many boxes as you can. You know, nobody was really encouraged to be one dimensional. You know, every aspect of the game, we can make an impact in some way or another.
Let me ask you this. What was it that made you a power hitter? Did you naturally have that in your body? Were there certain things that you worked on, certain drills, exercises? I'm asking you this in case there's younger players who aspire to have more power in their swing. What could they do? What did you do?
So for me personally, I kind of grew into most of my power. When I got drafted and went to the GCL my first season, I didn't get one extra base hit. And just kind of growing in, you know, finding grown man strength and working out and playing baseball as a job, I kind of I naturally developed pop, so the balls that I hit just started to go a little bit further. So there's that. But a big shift that took me from, you know, from kind of being like 10 to 15 home runs to like 20, maybe even 30, was that I started to look at myself as a power hitter instead of, you know, somebody that was just trying to, you know, just trying to get hits, and every now and then the power would come. I would start hunting for, you know, hunting pitches to drive more and not. And, it, you know, I probably strike out too much, but accepting that I'm going to strike out more than most people and being using that to be aggressive, that mindset shift is, I think, the big thing that developed for me. And learning to drive the ball the other way, learning to use the whole field. But that's – I don't know if that's something that I would – like the drills that I went through for that, I think were credit to my hitting coach. They were very personal for me. I don't know if I would say, hey, everybody go and do this.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's how hitting drills need to be used. It's almost as a prescription. So if you're working on something very specific, there's a drill that could help you specifically. And each player is going to be different. And drills are going to be different times in your career when you're struggling with different things. That's really cool. But the one thing that you said there that really stood out to me was when you made that mental shift. And when you identify as somebody, something, you're going to try to align with that. You're naturally, mm-hmm. you're going to try to align with that. And that sounds like what happened with you. And, you know, goes back to that self-awareness too, like we were talking about before. Like if you could have the self-awareness and then identify with an optimistic point of within that self-awareness, you're going to start to try to align with that. My own example was I always played very fearful. As a pitcher, I was very fearful all the way through college. And then one day I fielded a ball in the game and airmailed it over the first baseman's head in the stand. And I just remember, like, I didn't want to feel that way ever again because I felt scared. I was playing scared. Anytime they called fastball inside and I went to throw, I'd be like, I hope I don't hit this guy. I hope I don't hit, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I played, always. Luckily, I was talented, so I snuck by. But it wasn't until I said, you know what, I am not going to be that player anymore. I want to be the most confident player that I can be, and I never want to feel that way again. It was one decision. I made it, and then I started to align that way.
Yeah.
And that day on, that was it. And that was the year that I became an All-American, got drafted, and had all my success from that one decision that aligned, wow. like you're talking about. So that's
it's crazy how you just, like, if you just tell yourself, I'm going to be this person, and commit to it, like, you will just do it. Mm-hmm. And like, that sounds, I don't know, that sounds weird, but that was like in Double A, I had the same kind of experience. I started out okay, and then I struggled a little bit, and then I was like the 25th guy on the roster. I went back down to High A and had a terrible time. Like, it was awful, right? And then they called me back up to Double A, which I thought meant I was just about to get released, because, like, if you get a promotion when you're struggling, you're about to get released.
Right.
So, and I got back up to Double A, and all I knew was, like, I love Double A so much more than Single A, and, like, I'm gonna commit to, if this is gonna be it, I'm just gonna be the most relaxed. I'm gonna enjoy this as much as I possibly can. And I started playing like that. I started playing like somebody, you know, not even like with nothing to lose, but that just wasn't too concerned with whatever outcomes. Just, you know, I'm just here to play. And being that guy, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's so true. It sounds easy, like, when we're saying it, like, you just tell yourself it's going to be all right. And it, but yeah. It's really not.
Just tell yourself you're going to be a big leaguer. You'll be a big leaguer.
Well, you know what's funny? You say that, and I think that was the reason why I never made it to the big leagues, because my whole goal and my whole mind when I was young was to get drafted.
Mm-hmm. And you did.
I got drafted. And then I think from that point on, I was just like, I made it. I did, you know? And so I was just cruising through the minor leagues, you know? I didn't have that I didn't have that, the ultimate goal, which I should have said, I want to be a big leaguer. And you know what's funny? I talked to a few big leaguers who said they wish they would have said they want to be a career big leaguer or like a Hall of Famer.
Right.
So they played a few years in the big leagues, but they didn't get to the level. That was their goal, getting to the big leagues, but they should have shot for, you know, more.
It's hard. It's so hard to expect something that big from yourself. Like it's, and I think that's something that we could talk, like people in general could talk more with young players about, like that unreasonable level of confidence that it takes for somebody who's just starting out in pro ball to say, I'm going to be a Hall of Famer. Like that's almost a talent in itself. And you have to be willing to be wrong, because nobody, like if I say I'm going to be a Hall of Famer and then I don't, they're not going to put me in jail.
Right.
It'll be just fine. They're like, oh, he had really big expectations for himself and he fell short, but no one's going to hold that against me.
Right.
But we're scared to do that. We're scared to say like, I'm going to be great.
Right. Yeah, and it's doubt. It's all self-doubt. And, you know, and that's normal. And that's a normal thing. It's totally normal. If we asked, I'm sure 100% of people would say that there's some form of self-doubt in there. It's just how do we knock that down and become the most optimistic, you know, have that most optimistic vision of ourselves so we can attain that in the future. That's really cool. Was there any other, like mindset things that you did, like were you into like meditation or yoga or anything? Like I know some guys are crazy, you know, have all kinds of stuff, and then other guys just like to visualize, or some guys do nothing. Was there anything as far as mindset wise that you did?
So in the off season, there was a group workout that was kind of like an active meditation session that a big group of us, mostly pitchers, would do here. And a lot of that had to do with maintaining the mindset that you want with fatigue. So as as your body gets tired and your brain responds to that, where does your mind want to go? What kind of thoughts start creeping in? How well can you control them? And I think that kind of training translated, even though, you know, it might not have been something that I felt during the season, but where other guys, you know, during the season you get fatigued, right? And you notice like you might be a little more negative than you normally would be, and you don't know why, but it's like that because you're fatigued from the season. And I think training that in the off season kind of helped me, you know, stay in the fight a little bit longer than I might have otherwise, where, you know, some adversity over the course of the season might have taken me offline. I was able to, you know, stay in the right place a little bit more. So yeah, I think training the mind to be in control of itself is a big deal.
Yeah, that's huge. I totally agree. My father was big into, he was not a baseball guy at all. He could not help me with baseball one bit, but he was good. He was a football player in high school, but he was really good he got me into visualization. And I always would visualize what I wanted to happen before it happened. So like for a game example, like if we had a big game the next day, I would sit there, lay in bed before I fell asleep, and just visualize myself striking everybody out or doing really well. And the more real I can get with the visualization, seeing, like actually seeing the colors of the jersey of the team we're playing, and seeing the guys, if I knew the guys that I was facing, the more real I can make it happen in my head, the more of the times it would come to fruition the next day.
Mm-hmm. So can I ask you something about that?
Yeah.
Was that like, were you making the decisions in the visualization? Like, or were you yourself executing the pitches, or were you kind of like watching a movie of yourself?
That's a great question. That's a great question, because it was more like it was me. It wasn't like I was watching a movie from a further distance. It was me.
It was first person.
It was first person, but I wasn't in control. I was letting it happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Until something happened that I didn't like, and then I would zone in and try to, like, if I'm visualizing and they start hitting bombs off me, I gotta take, you know, I gotta take control over this visualization. You know what I'm saying? It's not gonna be a good day when that starts happening. So I would let it happen for the most part.
Gotcha.
But it wasn't really directed, if that's what you're asking. I was kind of letting it happen, but I tried to keep it on a positive note. Positive,
right.
Yeah, for sure. What about you? What made you ask that question? I guess I should say.
It's just that I've never done too much visualization. As far as like what you're talking about, where I'll step out of the box and in at bat and kind of visualize the swing that I want to take, right? Or the and I'll try to match that up, but I won't. Like before a game, I've never been the guy that imagine seeing a curveball and hitting it, or imagine seeing, you know. I was always I was more feel and I don't know, practice, but yeah, I find that interesting and kind of how that, yeah, like what which way in that is better to, you know, to make the action or to see what, you know, right, see yourself do well.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I was never trained. Again, it was just my dad was like telling me what he knew, and he was just a high school football player, so it wasn't like anything, you know. He could have been making it up for all I know. I don't know, but it worked for me. But it's funny you said that you would step out and visualize, and then in later in a sentence you said feel. And you know, when we were talking before, I said student of the game, master of feel. I think too, I say the word visualize a lot, but it's really more of a feeling too. Like it's a visceral thing. Like
right,
you stepped out of the box and you're visualizing your swing. You're like, you can feel it in your body almost without even doing it. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Is, yeah, that true?
Yeah. 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 It was the same thing with me in the visualization.
Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, you would know what the feeling of a good pitch was without making that motion.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And it was very visceral in my visualization. So I would be seeing it and feeling it at the same time, even though I'm laying there or sitting there or whatever it is. You know, what's cool too, is there was a study they did in, I think it was Australia, where this guy, they had a dartboard and he threw the darts lefty. He was a righty. He was a right-handed thrower.
Mm-hmm.
He threw the darts lefty. And then for 1 month, all he was allowed to do was visualize 5 minutes a day about hitting the bullseye, throwing lefty. So right, 5 minutes a day, he visualized hitting the bullseye, left-handed. He came back a month later, threw the darts left-handed, and he was twice as close from, like, they measured all the darts the first time, and they measured all the darts the second time, twice as close the second time. And he wasn't allowed to pick up a dart, and he hit the bullseye, like, six times.
Left-handed. Wow.
Yeah. So
It's not like some crazy thing that like just you said. Like a lot of like that's a visualization is a very real thing. I had a bunch of teammates that were real big on it. I guess I couldn't buy into it when people would tell me but it definitely works.
Well, it's weird. It's like, you know, it's definitely like, you know, ooh, you know, like.
Yeah, but it's baseball. Like, you have to have some of it. If you don't have a little bit of that, you're playing baseball. Right. You're not doing it right.
Right. You know, and baseball players are pretty superstitious. You know, there's a lot of us that have crazy. Did you have any crazy superstitions or anything like that?
Nah. I could get on a, you know, if I was doing well, I could get on a streak of something. So if I'm. The biggest one was in Johnson City in rookie ball. It was the first time I ever had Zaxby's. And I had Zaxby's for about a month straight before the game because I was raking. So I would go and get the same sandwich every day. Like that, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where if it's not broke, don't fix it. But I never had like, you know, any of that like OCD type of superstition. I didn't have anything like that.
That's so funny. I did the same thing with the food. That's so funny. What about on the other end of the spectrum? Let's say you get into a slump. What did you do to get yourself out of a slump when you were in a slump?
Oh, just cry. No, that's still, that to this day is the biggest thing. The what I've come up with so far is if I'm like really in a slump, like not like a couple bad games where it's like I don't know what I'm doing at the plate and I'm asking and I'm like, somebody help me, nothing's working. What I've come up with is if I can switch my focus to like being the best example of how to slump for my teammates, like if I switch my focus to that, like from the day I get to the ballpark, if anybody's paying attention to me, they're going to go, wow, that guy's struggling and he is handling it well. I'm not gonna cuss or anything when I come back in the dugout from a bad at bat. I'm gonna root my teammates on, and for all anybody can see, I'm just gonna be having a normal day. And when I've done that, is when I started hitting those line drives right at people, you know, and people started, oh dude, you're almost there, you're right there. And then I'm not thinking about that. I'm just like, just don't show them how frustrated you are. And I think, and I'm not like, I don't know if that's not always going to work. Like you're not going to do that and then start hitting, but at least you're making a positive contribution to like the culture of the team.
That's a great point. And that kind of goes back to, at least in my perspective, kind of goes back to that alignment thing where you're like saying, hey, it's almost like, you're aware of that you're in a slump, but you're saying, I'm going to be this guy anyway, you know, I'm still going to contribute. I'm still going to be the best player. I'm still going to, and obviously your goals are still to hit that line drive or whatever. So you're trying to align with what you believe is you mm-hmm. want to happen. That's really good.
You know, I never thought about it like that, but that's a good point, because when we're in a slump, it's like, for me, I'm chasing the result. You know, I need a hit. And it's like every single at bat, you just get enough confidence back to think like, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the time where I get the hit. I'm going to break out of it right here. And then you don't, and it's crushing. And then it's a cycle. You just get back to chasing the result just in time to not get the result. And it drives you crazy. But if you stop chasing the result, then, you know, you break out of that cycle.
And the cycle, like you said, too, I think a lot of guys, when they're in a slump, are saying, I'm in a slump. Like, they're saying, I'm in a slump. And they're identifying with that. So, it's that cycle. You know, I saw an interview, one playoff, with the announcer was asking Pedroia, like, what's the matter? What's going on with your swing? How come you're, you know, he was like 0-11 or something in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What's going on? And he looked at the reporter like, they were crazy. Like, what are you talking about? I'm smoking balls right now all over the field. He's like, they're just catching them. And I was like, wow, that's such a good perspective to have on it. Like, you know, imagine being 0-11 in the playoffs and having that perspective of like, you could tell in his eyes, like he was totally confused about the question. Like, are you kidding me? I'm absolutely ripping right now. Yeah.
You can't tell those guys that they don't rake.
Right.
It doesn't matter what's going on in the moment. Those guys know how good they are.
Right. I was having a conversation too with one of my buddies who was in the big leagues, and we were getting on the subject of confidence and how a lot of the great players in the big leagues have like this super confidence. And we were talking and he was saying that he thinks that's a huge reason. And we kind of touched on it before, but he thinks it's got a huge reason why those guys made it, because in the minor leagues, and I'm sure you can attest to this, that the, unless you're like a superstar, the level of talent is pretty the same in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. It comes down mm-hmm. to a lot of consistency and execution on how you do it. But I believe that the extreme confidence can help you with that and give you that cycle upward. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the confidence is obvious. Yeah, if you have confidence versus if you don't, it's a crazy difference. The struggle for me is like, it's like everybody knows that, but you can't fake it.
Right.
You can try. It's tough. But if you don't believe yourself to be, you know, the man, you know, you can tell yourself you're the man, but you have to believe it.
That's a great point. And I got a question for you, and I have no idea the answer. And it just made me think, because I have a 3-year-old son now, and I know you don't have any children, but where do you think we get that from? Do you think we're born with that? Like, do you think like someone is born with like, okay, they're going to be like a self-doubter, or they're just going to be confident? Or do you think like that's instilled upon us along the way? Like, where do you think you got your confidence from, and where do you got your self-doubt from? Like, where do you think it was environment, or is that just a natural thing? Like, hey, I'm 6'4". I was going to be tall naturally. Like, you know?
Yeah. I don't think it's something that, you know, that's like forced upon us, or that we're, you know, necessarily born with. I think we can be born into different situations that make it easier or harder to have confidence. And we all react to, I think, our environment differently. But I think it's something we can practice. I think it's really hard to. I think it's deeper than, you know, just practicing your skills a whole bunch, and then if you do that enough, you'll get the results. And if you get the results, you'll have the confidence. I think there's a better way, a more efficient way to do it than that. I think, you know, if we really look at ourselves and how we, our perspective on everything and what we view as good and bad and that kind of thing, where, you know, if we look at failure differently, if we look at failure as making us better, then it'd probably be easier for us to walk around with confidence. Because every time we like arrogantly went into a situation and got knocked on our butt, we would look at it as, oh wow, we just got way better. So we wouldn't be like, you talked about, like, if your mindset pitching early on had been, let me see how many home runs I can give up, because every home run I give up, or every hit batter, or every error, everything would make me the best player possible, then like every time you did do one of those things, is like your confidence would grow instead of getting knocked back down. So I think it's more a matter of perspective than anything else.
That's great, man. I love to hear it. Thank you for taking these questions. I know we went totally off topic. And
no, that was awesome.
I appreciate you coming on, because that was super insightful, man. And I think a lot of people who are watching this are going to take a few things away from this. And that, at least, is my whole goal, is to help as many young players as I can. And I appreciate you for doing the same. Where can people follow you at?
So at D to the Wash is my Instagram page. I actually just started another Instagram page where I'm kind of recording my process as a player, which is called, it's actually ironically called Coach D Wash, at Coach D Wash. So if you're more interested in kind of like my thoughts on the process and more, I post like my hitting videos and kind of what I'm working on. So if you want to see that stuff, it's at Coach D Wash. Yeah. And thank you so much for having me on. This has been, just for the conversation, it's been an awesome conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you too, for me as well. You know, being stuck inside, it's always great to talk baseball too. It's awesome. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Guys, go check out Coach D Wash on Instagram, man. You can't get a better resource than that, because someone who's still going through it currently, a professional player, and taking you through the process, like, you got to jump all over that, man. So check him out on Instagram. Thank you again so much. And if you got any questions, head over there, ask them. You can leave them in the comments wherever you're finding this video. And thank you for joining us. So let me shut this recording off and shut off this Facebook, and then we could talk a little more.